From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, beyond Area 51, worldwide secret bases. What are they doing? Here's what's happening. All the Fukushima plant in Japan, the dangers there have not gone away. Highly radioactive water seeping into the ocean now from Japan's crippled Fukushima plant is creating an emergency that the operator is still struggling to contain. The contaminated groundwater has breached an underground barrier, is rising toward the surface. It's exceeding legal limits of radioactive discharge. Countermeasures are planned, but they are only a temporary solution. What a mess. And, of course, that water could come this way. Intercepted conversations between two senior al-Qaeda figures prompting the U.S. to shut down those embassies in North Africa and the Middle East. The talk apparently involving top leader Ayman al-Zawahiri represented one of the most serious plots against American and Western interests since the 9/11 attacks, they say. The U.S. earlier said the closures were simply out of an abundance of caution. Some 20 U.S. embassies and consulates were closed on Sunday. Robert Young Pelton, of course, a regular here on Coast to Coast, author of License to Kill, Hired Guns in the War on Terror. Robert, I want to get your take on this incredible story. This is one of the first times that we have taken some preemptive measures to avoid any possible violence. But what are you hearing about this?
Well, there's something deeply suspicious about this because, first of all, Zawahiri has been on the run with bin Laden for many years, almost two decades. They don't use electronic communication. So the fact that suddenly this ELINT, electronic information, suddenly pops up. Secondly, the government actually released this information to the media on Friday and Saturday and telling them not to report it while issuing a worldwide travel warning for people who were traveling. So that means they told the media that it was an interrupted telephone call. And this comes at the heels of all this NSA sort of exposure. So the bottom line is Dr. Zawahiri will make up to two videos a week and release them on internet forums that, jihadis and sort of Islamic fundamentalists hang around on. And so suddenly he talks to his number two, who he just promoted essentially. And to me, that's like swatting, that thing where somebody calls the cops and says, hey, there's somebody breaking into a celebrity's home and people overreact. It almost seems like they were having fun with the fact that the NSA can hear them on a phone because nobody's actually overheard Zawahiri on a phone over the last 20 years.
No, you're right. I was thinking about that too, Robert, that right after the NSA, they're saying, well, let's have some fun. Let's just throw some buzzwords out there and let's run them all over the place.
Well, here's the other thing. In Afghanistan and Pakistan, the way they kill people is that they coordinate, they go in on their phones and they find the exact location and they drop in special operations teams and take them out. So if Zawahiri is calling number two, it's like, hey, let's go blow up an embassy, okay? It's too much to believe. So I think there's something deeply suspicious about this.
Okay, Robert, thank you so much. Robert Young Pelton. A secretive U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration unit is apparently funneling information from intelligence intercepts, wiretaps, informants, and a massive database of telephone records to authorities across the nation to help them launch criminal investigations of Americans. So that is happening too. In a real-life demonstration of scholar John Lott's book, More Guns, Less Crime, violent crime has dropped in Virginia as gun ownership has increased. What an unbelievably tragic story. Two young boys are dead after they were attacked by a snake that has escaped from an exotic pet store in the Canadian province of New Brunswick. Listen to this. Police responded to an apartment building when they discovered that two boys, 5 and 7, had been strangled by a large exotic snake. The boys had apparently been sleeping over a friend's apartment above the Reptile Ocean store, that's an exotic pet shop, when they were suddenly attacked by the snake. Police believe the snake escaped an enclosure down in the store and slinked its way through the ventilation system before reaching the upstairs apartment and then suffocated and strangled the two boys. A bizarre story out of St. Louis. A St. Louis musician was moving into a high-rise loft. The elevator doors opened. It was dark. He jumped in. It was nothing but the elevator shaft. He fell 18 feet to his death. Apparently, the elevator did not even have a proper license. Unbelievable story there. A private not-for-profit venture called Mars One is hoping to raise $6 billion over the next 10 years to train teams of astronauts while putting together the technology and resources to send four individuals into space in 2023. From there, they will launch subsequent teams every 2 years, establishing the first small settlement on Mars. Who better to react to this story but none other than Robert Zubrin from the Mars Society? This sounds exciting, Robert.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the thing that can be said about it is this. Is number one is there's nothing technically unfeasible about this plan of going one way to Mars, and it's not a suicide mission. It's just moving, okay? Like the one-way mission, you go somewhere, and that's where you go. The question, though, is can they actually raise the money to do this and not just send one mission, but if you're going to go one way, you have to have an organization in place that can keep sending more people, more supplies, more equipment, more of everything. You know, it's the Normandy Beach approach. You know, you're going one way, you're going to take the beach, you're going to take the continent, and you got to be prepared to back it up. And that's the open question. But from a technical point of view, this mission is actually easier than a round-trip Mars mission because you don't need to build all the spacecraft and everything to come back.
Well, you're right, though. I'm not sure they're going to be able to raise $6 billion. That sounds pretty ambitious, Robert.
Well, yeah. Now, in one way, it's possible. That is, look, you know, there's 7 billion people on the planet. 1 billion of them live in the advanced sector where people have money, and at least 10% of them believe that humans need to expand into space. That's 100 million people. 100 million people times $100 a year would be $10 billion a year. So if we could actually rally the people who believe this is an important thing to do to get together and back something like this, we could do it ourselves without the involvement of governments or any of that. But it's a question of morale. It's a question of raising the flag high enough that people will rally around. Now, the Mars Society, which I lead, is trying to do something like this, but not by just saying, oh, we're going to send people to Mars, give us money, but rather we're going to do a series of ventures, of which the next one is this one-year Mars mission in the high Arctic. You know, you do something
That's
important
right.
like that, you gain some credibility, and then you can rally people to do something more ambitious. So we're hoping to do something like this one step at a time. But I wish these people well. There's nothing impossible about it. If they can find backing, it can be done.
And their goal is to get there in 10 years. Robert, thanks so much. Would you eat this? The world's first lab-grown hamburger has been cooked and eaten. Scientists took cells from a cow, turned them into strips of muscle that combined to make a patty. One food expert said it was close to meat, but not that juicy. Another said it tasted like a real burger. Researchers say the technology could be sustainable as a way of meeting what they say is a growing demand for meat. I'm not sure. Up next, Shelley Redford Young joins us. We'll talk about her latest work, Taste of Health, next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Shelley Redford Young with us, author, nutritionist, culinary consultant. Her knowledge of the effects of diet and health matters exceeds beyond her expertise as just an author and chef. She's also a licensed lymphatic massage therapist and is trained in microscopic procedures. Shelley, what are microscopic procedures? What are they?
Hi, George. Thanks for having me on the show. Microscopic procedures are simply where we take a drop of blood out of the finger and place it on a slide. We do both a wet test right out of the gate and look at the blood live. And then also, we let the blood dry on the slide. The polymerized proteins centrifugally spin and settle into patterns, and we're able to view those under the microscope to determine health and wellness, you know, degeneration, how strong a constitution is. But it's very significant for helping people know where in the body they have weakness and how deep-seated it is.
So I just had a story right before you came on where they have made a patty, a burger patty, in a laboratory. You know, I try to hold back on meat as much as I can, Shelley. But, you know, I like a hamburger like everybody else does. But I got to tell you, I'm not sure I'd eat one of those things.
Yeah, you know, I think there's concern today a lot about messing with our foodstuffs, especially GMOs and things of the like. And, yeah, I would have a hard time myself eating something like that. And I usually like to skip the cow and just go right to the pasture where the greens are. So
absolutely.
I find that's the best energetic food for me.
Your new book, Taste of Health, and, of course, you wrote The PH Miracle with your husband, Robert Young. Tell me about this new one.
Yeah, I do recipe books called Back to the House of Health. And kind of the subtitle would be Where the Science of Food Meets the Taste of Health, right?
Oh, well, how come things that taste good aren't good for us?
You know, sometimes that seems to be the case. I think that's been my challenge in our mission, is to try to make healthy food taste great. But very oftentimes things like high sugars and sensationalistic flavors that we've, you know, become accustomed to, they kind of taint our taste buds and get us used to very, very salty, very, very sugary, very extreme flavors, when really the subtle, humble sweetness of beautiful garden green vegetables is probably the best thing for us. So I think, like anything, we can train our taste buds to like different things.
I think so, too. Now, let's get into some of the things about pH and how it has to do with being healthy. pH, of course, definition. What is it?
Yeah, pH, those of you that have taken your chemistry classes will remember that it stands for the power of hydrogen. And pH, for those of us who didn't take chemistry too much, has to do with just the chemistry of the surface areas of and the blood and tissues of our bodies. It can be the pH of your fish tank that you have to check to keep those saltwater fish alive and well. It can be the pH of your hot tub that you have to check. But it's an acid-alkaline balance, a strip that goes from 0 to 14, with 7 being neutral on the pH scale, and anything above 7 being base or alkalinizing, and anything below 7 being acidic.
If your body is too acidic, what happens?
Yeah, that's a great question, because most of us are too acidic, and there are signals that can come up, symptoms that can come up that can tell us we're too acidic. A few of those would be retaining water in the joints or in the tissues, maybe bags under the eyes, where the body is calling for fluids to dilute acids in the system. That's one signal that you're too acidic. Gaining weight, putting on too many extra pounds. Fat is actually created on the body to bind to acids and take them safely under the skin away from the internal organs. So any type of unusual weight gain means that we're usually too acidic. Aches and pains, and just pain in general, is a symptom of being too acidic. Whenever there's pain, there's acid, and when there's acid in the body, there's pain. So inflammatory conditions, anything that ends with an itis, bursitis, tendonitis, arthritis, any of those things are signals that we're too acidic.
I've read that cancer thrives in an acidic body. Is that true?
That's true. That's a great environment for cancer cells to proliferate and to continue growing, is an acidic environment. And on the reverse side of that, cancer cells, there are studies that show that cancer cells do not thrive and cannot proliferate and keep growing in an alkaline environment. Otto Warburg, the first gentleman that discovered the cause of cancer, he got a Nobel Prize back in the 1930s for this discovery. He discovered that as soon as you increase the sugar proliferations or fermentations in the blood and you decrease oxygen counts, you have an acidic environment, and that's when a healthy cell turns into a cancer cell. So I think we do know the cause of cancer. I think what's happening now is very exciting, is that we're starting to bridge with the Western medicine communities in discovering that there are ways that we can change the internal environment to an alkaline environment and control cancer growth and stop metastasis from happening.
At what age, Shelley, should people be concerned about their pH level? I mean, should they be concerned about it when they're in their 20s, in their 30s, 40s, 50s? Any specific pattern here?
Yeah. You know, when we're born, you know, we have about 90, we're made of 90% water and about 10% matter. And then as we get older, that changes, and we're about 70% water and 30% matter. And of that 70% water, you know, we try to keep an alkaline environment to keep homeostasis in the body. Most kids, you can look at kids, and they can eat anything, and they usually do quite well unless they're a sick child. But this usually catches up with people if they continue an acidic environment and eating and drinking habits. This usually will manifest itself somewhere in the 30s. In the early 30s, that you'll start noticing you start slowing down, you have more aches and pains, you may have more injuries when you're doing sports, things like that, little signals that you need to pay attention to your diet and what you're eating and drinking to watch your pH. We also come with kind of a bank account of alkalinizing buffering system in our bodies. Those are the bicarbonates that are held in the blood and tissues that we have to maintain the blood at a count of 7.365. So as soon as those become depleted, as soon as we start tapping into calcium from the bones or magnesium from the muscles, then we start noticing that we're going into a state of degeneration and we're no longer maintaining homeostasis in the body. So to answer the question, simply any age should pay attention to the pH. It is important. It is vital for good health. So a mother nursing a child, whatever she eats or drinks, will go into that perfect food, mother's milk, and affect the child. And everything passes right through. I was with my daughter-in-law on a trip, and she was telling me things that she could and couldn't eat because it would affect the baby. So at any age, it's very, very important. There's never an age not to super alkalinize the blood and tissues. And there's a ratio that makes it that way, and that is that it takes 20 parts alkalinity, or we could call that sodium bicarbonate, baking soda, to neutralize one part acidity in the bloodstream.
That
so
much.
You could
huh?
never over-alkalinize.
No, not at all. You know, I wish I knew now what I should have known then. Because it sure could have avoided a lot of things.
You've changed your, I've heard about your great story about being pre-diabetic and having to make some changes there and turning that and reversing that around.
Yeah, and you know, and it makes you watch it. That glucose level, once it gets to a certain level, you got to get it down.
That's right.
And you do it all. And so, you know, you go to alkaline-type foods, the green foods and things like that, and it those numbers drop dramatically.
Yeah, it's really quite easy getting back to the house of health. You know, if we understand our chemistry and our physiology, this makes a lot of sense to people when it's explained to them, like, oh, yeah, I understand now, you know, that I should keep my blood, you know, and keep my tissues in an alkaline environment. We are and like the ocean, you know, the ocean is about 7.378 or above that, 7.34. 7.9 up into there, but the blood and tissues are kept at 7.365, and so we are salty. You know, all you have to do is taste your tears, skin your knee, you know, taste your blood. We are a salty, aqueous.
Well, then you recommend you eat salt, don't you? I always thought people said stay away from salt.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there about salt and what it does. And we all know that if we put salt in our soft water tank in our house, in our homes, you know, the water is silkier. It's less corrosive for the pipes. It cleans better.
Is there a certain kind of salt, though, you should eat?
Pardon me?
Is there a certain kind of salt you should eat?
Yeah. You don't want to be eating table salt that's been bleached and iodized added to
bad
that.
Stuff.
You want to eat Real Salt, and that's even a brand name that you can look for, but sea salt, Celtic salt, any of those are very good, where the minerals are still intact.
Okay, that's important. Shelly, we're coming back. We're going to take some calls with you as we talk about your health on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Shelly Redford-Young, author of Taste of Health and The pH Miracle. They're lining up to talk with you, Shelly, before we go to calls. Have you yourself used the pH diet?
I have. I've used it since I was in my 30s, and I love it. I'm a 60-year-old grandma, and I'm pain-free. I still run the mountain. I'm in my college-sized pants, and it's worked for me. I really love this way of living, eating, and thinking. I've seen parents who have lived on prescription drug medications, and I've just never wanted to go there. So it's at its best, it's a health preventive maintenance program. It's a preventative program so you won't get sick. That's why I do it. But for people that have lost the balance in their bloodstreams and tissues, it's a great way to come back and get into balance.
Well, it sure is. But, it's also fun taking care of yourself and getting healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be an exciting journey and, a pathway to discovery. And, if you lose your health, you lose everything, And so I think it's of utmost importance to learn as much as you can about your systems, your lymphatic system. And the interesting thing that I'm most excited about just recently is that the researchers in the University of Michigan have discovered stem cells are existent in all of us in the villi, the small intestine.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably are aware of the controversy that went on with using stem cells from embryos.
Oh, of course. And it's still ongoing.
And then it evolved to embryonic fluid, had stem cells. Now we know that we all carry our own stem cells in the intestinal villi. So the gut becomes the focal point of good health. And that's what's exciting to Rob and I, is to be able to encourage people to take care of themselves, become their own physicians, and to make their food their medicine and their medicine their food.
As much as you can.
That's right.
Let's go to the phones. Chelsea's with us in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Chelsea. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Hey, I get to be first, huh?
Yes, you do. You're the winner.
I was wondering, what's the best part to test with a pH strip? Should you test your saliva or your blood or your urine? And how often? And also, do you recommend eating sodium bicarbonate also? Will that help?
Once a day in the morning, right, Shelley?
Yeah, great questions. The pH strips that you can buy, the hydrogen paper that you can buy to test yourself, is a really great way to give yourself the levels of your tissue acidosis. So first of all, you can test your saliva, and it's best to do it after you eat something, right after you eat something. It can be anything. It can be an almond. It can be an apple. Whatever it is, you can test your ability to create in your saliva the first sodium bicarbonate production to alkalize that food as you're masticating it. So you can test under the tongue, and that gives you a good indication of if you have a good buffering system, if you're able to neutralize the acids that are going in through the mouth. And then if you test your first urine in the morning, that's a good indicator of your basic tissue acidosis that you're dealing with through the night. And then if you kick in and you're able to test your second urine of the morning, a lot of people don't have time to do all that, but if you can test the second urine and you're even more alkaline with your urine after that first test, you can be assured that your alkalizing buffering system is working pretty good. It's when people get depleted in their alkalizing buffers and aren't able to create the sodium bicarbonate they need naturally that they run into problems and they test higher acid. And I think also it's just accepted in Western medicine that an acidic urine is normal when really it doesn't have to be so. You can have an alkaline count in your urine, and that's an indicator that your rivers and streams, your internal rivers and streams, are actually in better balance.
Shelley, if people generally don't feel good, can you assume that maybe their pH is out of whack?
Yes, you can assume that. And again, the saliva and urine test is a good way to see if that's the case. Your blood pH is taken differently, and that has to be done through a test through the doctor's office, and blood pH is always sustained at 7.365. So you can't always tell, you know, because that blood is always maintained that way, what the tissues and the rivers and streams of the body are doing. So I think the paper test is really good for people to keep track of it for themselves.
Next up, we go to Ben in Draycut, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Benjamin, go ahead.
Good morning, George.
Hi.
Good morning, Miss Young.
Yes, hi there. And I just wanted to finish that last question. George, I'm sorry. She asked if drinking sodium bicarbonate or eating it was a good idea. You can always put, you know, a half a teaspoon or a teaspoon of sodium bicarbonate in a glass of water and take it. And, that's a fine way to
supplement. It's not going to hurt you, is it?
No, it's not going to hurt you. And it used to be, before we had Alka-Seltzer and Pepto-Bismol and things like that, people used sodium bicarbonate in water to do that.
So, okay, let's go back to Ben. Go ahead, Ben.
Yes, Ben.
All right, good morning. I personally don't have a very good eating habit. I eat the same thing every day. And
what is that, by the way? Now I'm curious.
I'm on a fixed income.
What do you eat every day? I'm curious.
Sandwich.
Just a sandwich. Okay.
Eat sandwiches and pretzels and pickles. Pretty much it. And
are those sandwiches? What do you have in the sandwich? Is it a meat and cheese sandwich? Something like that?
No.
Turkey? What, Ben?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear him.
I don't eat meat. I have sandwiches every day.
What's in the sandwich, Ben?
Ham and cheese.
Okay.
Oh, ham and cheese. Well, that's a meat.
That's a meat. Surprise, Ben. It's a pig.
Yeah, well, how are you feeling? First of all, let me ask you, how do you feel on this diet?
What's that?
How are you feeling eating this way? Are you feeling pretty good?
I get through the day. You know, I just, this is all I can eat.
How old are you, Ben?
I'm 55.
All right, Shelley, well, give us some quick advice before we go on to some other calls.
Okay. Well, yeah, I would take your fixed income and somehow, some way, start drinking alkaline water and get some sort of green in your diet besides pickles. Pickles are
too salty,
vinegar, which is a high acid. And I think at some point, the acidic diet could catch up with you in the form of some type of, you know, shock or surprise or, you know, degeneration of some sort. You've got to get the chlorophyll molecule into the intestines to build healthy blood. So try to find something green, you know, some kale chips, some spinach. Take after Popeye, you know.
Now, this is interesting, though, Shelley, because
alkaline water, that would be my best advice for the fixed income.
Patricia Bragg recommends apple cider vinegar every day and claims that it helps balance your pH. So are you two at odds about vinegar?
Yeah, we have a difference of opinion there, and I understand the reasoning. The approach is that if we put vinegar in the stomach, we will help digest and break down food better, when really hydrochloric acid in the stomach is there because of sodium bicarbonate production that is very, very high. So the vinegar actually alerts the body and would probably give an autoimmune response, in our opinion and in our research. We found it a lot more results in just having people alkalinize what they're eating and drinking and take the vinegars out. We see it in the bloodstream, and they do much better.
We did a little
acid reflux, less acidity, less inflammation.
We did a little campaign where we lost over 1 million pounds. It was a shape-up campaign. And I'm sure that we helped some people. When you start to balance your pH, do you automatically lose weight?
If you're overweight, yes. That's a byproduct of the program, is that the pounds melt away because you simply don't need to be creating fat to bind acids and, you know, as a safekeeping under your skin and on your body. Fat is a buffer of acids. It holds acids. I had a doctor who was a plastic surgeon who actually liposuctioned fat out of thighs and stomachs and buttocks, and she sent it all into the lab and called us and said, "You're absolutely right. All of this fat is acidic. It's high acid." So
interesting.
Fat is a protective buffering for us, and that's why you lose it when you alkalinize, because you simply don't need it. A little fat on the body is okay. I mean, you need fats for the biolipid membranes of most cells, but you don't need to be overly.
Sometimes, though, you could lose too much weight and you don't look good.
Well, of course.
I've seen that happen a lot.
The opposite system, where somebody is wasting away, is also an indication that there's something wrong with the intestinal villi, that they're not building good blood, that they're not building good muscle. So, yes, either extreme is an indication that something's wrong.
First-time caller, Jason, Lancaster, South Carolina. Hi, Jason. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Kelly, how are you?
Great.
Good.
I just finished reading a very interesting book about the periodic table of elements, and I read a story in there about how they discovered that iodine in the salt prevented a lot of mental retardation, especially during, you know, development years, like toddler years. So, you know, I wonder if it's still a good idea to feed our little babies, you know, like my toddler, iodized salt, or should we go back to the natural sea salt? Just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I think if salt is in its natural form, it's always better. And iodine, yes, is good. It's needed for proper thyroid function. I get my iodine through seaweed, and that's how I get mine. I also take it as a supplement. And I don't think it's the iodine that's added to the salt that's so bad. I think it's the bleaching processing that happens to salt that strips it of the minerals.
As they do with flour.
About.
They do the same thing with flour, Shelley, don't they?
With flour?
They bleach it?
Oh, with flour, yes, with white flour. Yeah, there's a bleaching process, and we're stripping off nutrients and minerals, and that's the concern there. That's why we take people back to natural salts. And we have a liquid salt that has all the minerals that are intact, and one of those is iodine.
Let's go to Dorothy, Gilroy, California. Hi, Dorothy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, George. Shelley, could you please tell me if plain Greek yogurt has an acid or alkaline pH, and whether you have charts in your pH Miracle book about which foods do and do not have the right pH?
Yes, good question. And what you'll find out there, along with our pH charts and our pH food lists, are differing counts and differing opinions of what is acid and what is base, what is acid and what is alkaline. Your question about yogurt, I don't have the pH of Greek yogurt at my fingertips right now, but I can tell you anything fermented, and yogurt is a fermented food, usually tests out on the acidic side. We don't find fermented foods being particularly contributing to sound health under the microscope when we're looking at blood. So in our approach, we take fermented foods out of the system for a period of time, and we just find that the gut usually does better and creates its own good intestinal bacterial loads at the rate that it should and at the balance that it should with a diet that's high in alkalizing foods.
What do you think of green juices, Shelley?
I'm a great proponent of green juices. I live on green juices. I love fresh green juicing. I've studied the chlorophyll molecule. It's identical to the blood hemoglobin molecule, and so drinking green juices and keeping a chlorophyll-rich diet is like giving yourself the best blood transfusion that you can. Besides that, green juices have high electrons. And when we're looking at the atom, the electrons are the ones that add energy to our body. Protons take energy from our body. So a diet that is raw, that is close to a plant-based raw diet, there's study after study, it's not just us proclaiming this, but many people have found that their imbalances and their degeneration in their body clears up, and their blood cells do become better. Even blood cell counts, red blood cell counts, can increase by increasing green juices into the diet. I even drink liquid chlorophyll every day. That's just chlorophyll from alfalfa sprouts. I drink it straight. So,
all right, next up, Tom's in Tucson, and Tom is now on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tommy, go ahead.
What is a good way to get to sleep at night?
Knock yourself out.
What about melatonin?
Melatonin?
Yeah.
I mean, I think those are good supplements that enhance sleeping and you know, I think there are supplements and herbs that can contribute to the rise in, you know, serotonin and the things that you need to go to sleep and relax. I think we're so tapped into artificially tapping into our adrenal system with pseudo energies like coffee and, you know, pop and sugary drinks and things like that that increase the adrenaline flow through our system. I think a great massage before you go to bed is good for relaxation and sleep. I think, you know, managing your stress levels is very important. Doing the things you love, great relationships with your loved ones, all of these contribute to being able to lay down and let go of your worries and be able to go to sleep.
And do it naturally.
Right.
A lot of times people can't sleep because they're just too worried about the events of the day.
Exactly, exactly. They can't get their brains to shut off. They can't stop thinking. And I just find that if people really watch what they're eating and drinking, this contributes a lot to sound health, both when you're awake and while you're sleeping.
Where do people generally get the pH strips? Can you get them at a drugstore, or do you have to get them online?
Yes, you can get them at most pharmacies. You can ask for Hydrin paper or pH paper. I've noticed in the health food stores that you see them a lot more, and we also sell them right from our PH Miracle Center in Valley Center, California.
All right, very good. Marilyn in Trenton, New Jersey. Let's squeeze you in here, Marilyn. Go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hi.
I had a question for your guest. I guess it's a two-part question, but I was wondering if you're not eating a whole lot of alkalinizing foods, what would your favorite supplements be to help you alkalinize your body? I use a product called Colon Blow that does a wonderful job of just keeping me regular. But I wondered what other supplements you think would work well to get the desired effect. And I also, I heard the announcement, the wonderful announcement that Art Bell is...
What happened to you? Are you all right? She fell apart or something.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
I think she started, okay? I don't know. She started crying and that was it. But look, I've got about 40 seconds. Any kind of supplements you can take?
Yes, yes. I think any of the, you can go to the health food store and find dehydrated, low dehydrated greens that are encapsulated. You can get a grass supplement that has different grasses in it that can help the chlorophyll that you're taking in your body and the alkalinizing. Magnesium is a great supplement to take. The trace minerals are very, very important. The salts, the bicarbonate salts that you can take in supplements help to alkalinize the blood and tissues. And there are many things out there that you can do. Even the baking soda that we talked about before, even drinking the baking soda can help.
Okay, Shelley, thanks so much. Good luck in your work, of course, the pH Miracle and your latest Taste of Health. Marilyn, if you're okay, call us back. Hope you didn't get into some car accident or something. Oh, my gosh. We'll be back in a moment as we talk about Beyond Area 51 on Coast to Coast AM.